Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey, and today I'm here with Tim Shaw and Fuzz Townsend from Car SOS. How are you doing?
Hello. Have you ever met Adrian Flux? Does he exist? Is he
Well, actually, I used to. Well, Adrian Flux used to insure all my vehicles. Actually,
did he?
They did.
The man himself.
No, not the man himself. Well, Adrian Flux, the company, did. So I've never met Adrian Flux, if Adrian Flux exists.
I reckon he did.
He must have.
Yeah.
It's like maybe. It's like Bert One.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Designing all those cars.
Yeah, the Italian cars. Some people pronounce it Bertone, but it's actually
that's wrong.
Bert One.
Wrong.
Bert One. I'm learning so much.
Yes, it's that's Bert right. One. There's a Bert Two and a Bert Three as well.
Yeah.
So moving on, we're all here because we're here to look at a very special vehicle in preparation for a very special event.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes, we are.
Yeah. Would you like to tell us a little bit about this?
Well, hold on. Just wait a minute. Is this going out before we give it back or after?
After.
That's good. That's the right answer because otherwise,
after because otherwise that would be an absolute suicide on my part.
Yeah, but otherwise it would have been very short podcast.
Yeah,
hang on. The other thing as well is this going out before the TV show?
That's all right. We don't mind that. That's okay.
Really,
I'll stick my neck out. And okay, say that's okay.
Wow, I didn't. As I was concerned, Disney would absolutely kick off.
No, we're going to do it afterwards.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
We're safe. We can talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Really.
Like it's already gone out.
It's already happened. But actually, we're here to put the finishing touches to.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, the fact that we are here with the Land Rover podcast, I would suggest that it means that we have done
a Fiat.
Yeah, great.
Now, we have done a Series 1 Discovery.
Yes.
The original Discovery. The car that we went on to learn is reasonable. Do you want to get a chair?
No, I'm all right.
There's a rolly one over there.
Don't worry. Make him stand.
He's the one we're doing is the one that is claimed, and we've gone on to discover is true, the car that saved Land Rover.
Yeah. Now, if Land Rover had not commissioned this particular vehicle, they would not have had the market share that they have enjoyed, or the company has enjoyed, really as a result of this one particular vehicle for over 30 years since.
And it's interesting. So Fuzz and I, when we started working on this car, we brought this car in and started working on it. We were chatting about what is the history of the Discovery? Where did it come from? It was designed, we know, in this country, but who designed it? So I went on a mission in this particular episode, probably one of, for me, the most exciting missions ever, to try and find the guy who was responsible. Now, it turns out the guy, he's a very, very modest man, and he was part of the team, as he'll say. But having done my research, he was at the top of the team of designing the bit that I would consider the most important bit, which is the aesthetics of the outside of the car. This guy, Mike Sampson, who is already, I mean, you were like, go and find me Mike Sampson. We get that man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We wanted to find the person who had penned the outline of this vehicle that we have known now for so very long and has influenced so many other vehicles. Oh. And yeah, there he was.
It was, I mean, the journey to find, this is the interesting thing for me. You'd think, you know, car designers would be out there celebrating what it is they do. No, a lot of these guys are just unassuming, quiet people that have, you know, fairly sort of private lives. This guy I had to go into, I heard he was from somewhere around the Bicester area. I literally was walking through the streets of Bicester with a megaphone, asking people if they'd heard of Mike Sampson. Now, by some miracle, one of the guys that worked in a potato van when I served this guy on a Saturday morning, you need to go and see, he goes into that pub. So I went up to this pub and met another bloke, and the bloke said, I know where Mike Sampson lives. So we found Mike Sampson, I doorstepped him, and he's now gone on to become a friend, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I've got Mike Sampson's number, you know.
Have you actually got
Mike Sampson? Well, it turns out, you see, on the side, he's a bus enthusiast
as
well. Yes,
as you are.
Yeah, we both have a penchant for Bristols, actually.
Is that right?
We do, yeah, because I have a Bristol LS6G. With an ECW body.
And I don't have a Bristol LS6G without an ECW ABC.
Yes, right. Anyway, so I digress. But anyway, he's a great guy, and he walked us around the Series 1 Discovery. And there were so many little parts of it that, you know, when he explained why they had been used and how they altered the look of the vehicle, I mean, like, Maestro van, back lights.
Realise.
Now, how much of an influence do you think that those would have on the design of a vehicle.
Well, I know that they do because they have a bit of a slash cut down the side, a chamfer off.
Chamfer.
So the idea was what, and Mike told me this, he's obviously told you the same thing. The problem was that they were restricted as to which components they could use, and it was a budget thing.
Yeah,
so they
money,
had a small team and certain amounts of money. And they were like, sorry, guys, this is what you get. Now, these days they work on a percentage base where the company will say to the designer, you have to get a minimum of 60% crossover parts from a previous or already existing model. But back then they literally just went, right, you got these headlights, you've got those backlights, make it work.
Okay. But that chamfer meant that when you look at the Discovery One from the side, it shortens the overhang, the length of it. So it makes everything, gives everything better proportions. So it actually did the disco a really serious favour.
The other thing I remember him telling me, which I'll never forget, two things actually. One, he said the car appears shorter. You think the Discovery is shorter than a Range Rover Classic.
Yeah.
And I said, why is that? And he said, because we were given the Range Rover Classic chassis, it was a certain length, right? So that was going to be the length of the Discovery. But what we did was we actually hid some of the back end of the chassis in the bumper. So if you go into the back of a Discovery, you're instantly hitting chassis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then beyond that bumper, that's where the car starts. And that extra sort of 6 inches of bumper gives you the impression the car is shorter, so therefore a different model which is genius.
Perfect, yeah.
And then the other one he said to me was, as a car designer, you have to think about the way that people interact. He said the first reason that somebody would go into a dealer would be the aesthetics of the outside of the car.
Yeah.
So it's the outside of the car that's important. It sells you the car to begin with. But then the first point of interaction is the door handle. And he placed a lot of weight on how you interact with that door handle, because if your wife, as he said, breaks a fingernail and the thing pisses you off, you won't buy the car.
Yeah.
So you never think about it. But in terms of what you interact with, the door handle's the first thing, and therefore massive importance is put on the door handle.
However, that's not as big a take-home as the one that he gave me.
Go on.
Just.
What was it?
That is, you know, the interior.
Jasper Conrad.
No, Terence Conrad.
Terence Conrad. Yeah.
Well, that's what everybody says, Terence Conrad, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So they were consulted. They sort of gave a sort of brief, but it was down to the team, the Land Rover team, to actually come up with the design and the shape and all that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know the little bag?
Yeah.
Everybody
of course
says, oh, that's the Terence Conrad.
The quintessential bag. Yeah, absolutely. If you've got one of those, you've got the lot.
Belinda Mason.
Who's that?
That's who designed it.
Just part of the design team.
I'm pretty sure that was her name. Yeah, she was part of the design.
That's brilliant. So when people go around saying Terence Conrad did it,
yeah.
No, he put his name to it, mm-hmm. but actually it was designed by Belinda.
Well, it's like the Doctor Who, yeah. It's like brilliant. The Doctor Who theme music. Everybody says, because it goes on the credits,
yeah.
Ron Granger. No. Delia Derbyshire.
Really?
It was Delia Derbyshire's work. All her work. Ron Granger was the BBC's arranger.
He just
swiped in and took the thing. Belinda Mason. I'm pretty sure it's Belinda Mason.
Interesting subject you go into there. Other people taking the credit for other people's work. You know, the one thing about Car SOS, which we like to celebrate, is the fact that we don't pretend that Fuzz and I do it all.
No, that's
we have a big team. We have 9 cars, you know, 10 cars in 9 months. So that's 0.9 of a month per car.
That's mad.
And we can't do that as two people.
No. Well, if you consider that every car that we do normally runs at a minimum of 800 hours. So 800.
Absolute minimum. Absolute minimum.
Yeah. So that's 800 person hours of work go into, and that's just in the main workshop.
Yeah.
Then if you take into account any machining work, you know, sort of engines, gearboxes, anything that's outsourced, add that into the mix. So you've got an
1500
easy, yeah, you've, yeah.
average of 1500 per car.
You've got a lot of hours.
So this Discovery, obviously, was rotten in all the usual places, wasn't
comedy
it?
Comedy rotten.
Yeah, and some of the unusual places too.
Right.
Yeah, this is one that you wouldn't, there's no other scenario in life that I can think of, and I'm not looking for a pat on the back, I'm just being honest. I can't think of another scenario in life where this car would have been restored, saved. He just wouldn't.
No.
It was just financially completely, not just like, oh, we might break even, we might go 20 grand over. No, no, you would have gone staggering amounts. It wouldn't be worth it unless it was for a sentimental value, which precisely is what
exactly.
It's for.
So the point of the front wings actually hanging off, you know, it's like that rotten. It had rotted. It had been used as a builder's hack.
Yep.
So with loads, just in different use, bags of cement chucked in the back, loads of things that will help it to rot even more. And then it was parked up in a field for 5 years.
Wow.
But it did have the Terence Small Rod bag. Was it small?
It did.
Rod? tiny rod.
Terence Conrad bag. You know, the Belinda Mason or what. I think,
yes,
I think that
did.
Was the name. But it was, it did have It did have that bag in.
Like so many cars, I've bought cars before that have all the trinkets with it, like the bags, and you think, oh, the whole car must be in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
It's got all the annoying stuff, like the bag. You get home, as we did with this, got it on the ramp, and it was just shocking. You know, yeah. Forget the bag. You don't care about the bag. Whoever designed it.
Well, for example, to give you a kind of another clue of how to, what sort of shape it was in, there are 10 points at which the body meets the chassis, sort of 10 mounting points. Three of them had any connection with between chassis and body, and two of those were kind of tenuous connections, tenuous links. So in fact, it was lucky even just collecting it, putting it and getting it into the workshop, it was lucky that it didn't just shift.
The body just flopped.
I mean, if we had a covered trailer to pick it up, and we didn't, we could have just blown off and lost the body. It's going, hang on a minute, where the hell's the body? It's just got a chassis.
Can you imagine that? It was just that bad.
Crikey. Yeah. A few ratchet straps needed to hold the thing together.
Really a very, very poor.
So at the time that you're recording this is the day, no, actually it's a few days before we give the car back next week.
Yeah.
And we're quite excited about that. It's been a pretty big episode for us. We've I've managed to persuade Jeremy Clarkson.
Really?
Be a part of,
I'm sure I've heard of him.
Guy's a legend. I mean, you've got to love a bit of Clarkson. Who doesn't? I mean, there's a naughty bit of every one of us that admires the fact that he's a brilliant broadcaster and he's created some amazing content. So
yeah, absolutely.
We both appreciate that. And this is how it came about. So when I first interviewed the lady who's the son of the guy whose car we've restored, she made the mistake. I said, oh, so what is... What does he do? What does your son James do other than whatever, the car? And she said, I was expecting the usual answer is, oh, they're a big fan of Car SOS, they love it. And she just went, oh, TV shows, he loves TV. And I was expecting her to say Car SOS. She went, oh,
you were just waiting, weren't you?
Yeah.
Just,
Clarkson's Farm is what she said. And I was like, all right, you've
got a slight blow to the ego.
Went from 6'6" to 5'2".
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that gave us the inclination, right? Okay, I appreciated the honesty. You know, yes, he loves Car SOS, or he did on that day because it was the day we agreed to pick his car up and do it up. So Clarkson's Farm, that set that rolling. So I went about trying to get in touch with Jeremy and managed to, and because of the cause, what we're doing here, the restoration we've done, he has agreed next week, very early, to help give the car back.
Yeah, he hasn't done it yet. Don't annoy
Jinx
him.
It.
Don't
yeah.
annoy, if you're going to annoy anybody, just carry on annoying me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't do it to Jeremy Clarkson.
No, we're looking forward to that, having Jeremy do it. The guy is going up. So the idea is with the reveal is that he's going up there to have a tour of Clarkson's Farm.
Cool.
And at which point, Jeremy's going to come around the corner in our guy's car, and hopefully he's not going to suss anything. He'll probably say, oh, I've got one of those. And that's the bit that we love. That's the where the moment really
the
happens.
The penny drops.
No, but
it's the bit before the penny. The penny is dropping. Yeah. It's like this is one of those old chocolate machines where the penny goes in and then you go clunk, and then you have to give it a slight nudge and you hear it go down a little bit more. No, it's not down at the but you can't get the chocolate yet.
Yeah.
Keep going, and eventually dunk.
It's out.
They're there.
It's that moment. Yeah. The moment you get them. That's the moment that we love. The moment when they go when they just instinctively say, oh, yeah, I've got one like that. I wish mine was like that. Because you know as a viewer, you cannot cheat that stuff. You know, you cannot fake that stuff. If it's not real, it's not real.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about Car SOS. That, for Fuzz and I, is the absolute most important moment because that's where all our hard work and the team's hard work pays off. When you see that face and they have no idea what's going on. And even though they watch the show, you often have to spell. The funny thing is, right, when we sometimes do reveals, we did one the other day for another car, and I was standing alongside the bloke with my arm round him. And you'd think that because he looks up at me and goes,
yeah.
Oh, because he recognises my face because he's a fan of the show, his head just goes, must be a family member. They don't suddenly go, oh, it's the two guys off the telly. So there'd be many times when Fuzz and I have given a car back. And
I was standing right in front of him.
And he just smiled at you.
With his family behind. And then he went, oh, look, that's right, Fuzz. All right, how you doing, Fuzz?
And I was
standing next to his car.
With his family.
But it still hadn't dropped at that point.
Because he's seen family members he recognises. He's seen Fuzzy recognised. So in his head, he's just, they're all people he recognised. So nothing weird's happening.
Sure.
And he's looking at me going, yeah, I recognise you. And then he's looking at this stuff to go, what? What's the big deal? Why are we here?
And there's a car.
Yeah, and he's
exactly
like,
the same as his, except restored.
Restored.
Right in front of him. And it just didn't drop.
Yeah.
That's what I think a lot of people maybe don't... They don't associate that something like that could ever happen to them.
Yeah.
But that's what's so nice about Car SOS is it's so relatable to so many people who, you know, I can think of numerous off the top of my head who grew up with those Discoveries. In fact, Alistair, who's here photographing the car today, that was his childhood car.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I had one. I had one as a daily driver. I loved it.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
My one broke down not far from here. I used to live near Brook Pass. My one broke down as I was going to the tip. It was full of rubbish. I was going to the tip on a Saturday morning and the cam belt went, and I knew that I was supposed to do it, but I hadn't got around to it. Bang, it went. And I walked back to my local pub, which was probably about half a mile back the direction I came. And I was just, oh no, what am I going to do? Get this thing back now. And I said to the landlord there, I said, my Discovery's just broken down there. It's full of stuff for the tip. And he goes, oh yeah. His eyes lit up. I said, oh, thinking of an easy way out of here. I said, why, do you want to buy it? And he went, I'll swap you 300 pints for it.
No,
he did.
That's right. So I said, you do that, but you've got to go and get it. You've got to get it and you've got to empty it. So I don't have anything more
you
to do with
hands it. Right,
wash my hands of it. Yeah.
Oh, 300 pints. Sweet.
I've washed my hands in.
So at the end of the night, he only owed him 100 pints.
I was going to say.
Absolutely hammered.
It actually took quite a long time to get.
But hang on. Let's just think of the maths of this, right? Let's just be honest here for us. He said 300 pints. So if you start drinking and you're five in and he tells you you're seven in, you're going to believe it. And then at seven, possibly. He tells you you're 12 in. Yeah. I reckon you only got about 60 pints out of it.
Yeah, maybe so. Anyway, you know, that's all part of it. But I felt like I got a good deal.
Yeah.
So it did feel like a good thing at the time. But now that we're working on this Discovery, I wish I had that one now still.
Yeah.
Because actually the back end of my one had already been rebuilt and everything. So, do you know, it was a bit tired inside, but I could have rectified that.
I think it was just
a lazy Saturday.
You've sort of knocked it on the head there, though, with how they used to be viewed as engine donors, disposable vehicles, runarounds.
Totally.
And now they've really come into their own and people have fallen over themselves to restore them.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't pick my jaw up off the floor when I saw the job that's been done on.
It's just amazing. I mean, you know, nowadays I don't do nearly so much as I used to because... I'm too old.
Come on, sweet cheeks, me too.
I used to do absolutely well. In series one of Car SOS, I did...
You were the only mechanic.
I was the only mechanic. Yeah. So the other guys were just body guys. And it was, you know, I was...
Very different proposition.
Ragged. So gradually, I've been given an easier life. So now I get to pick a few jobs and just do those now and have fun with them, really. So, you know, on this one... Did the engine service, cam belt, water pump and all those kinds of things, and did a little bit on the gearbox and transfer box, which I thoroughly enjoyed. You know, that was great, but I didn't have to do much else apart from unbolt a few panels, do a bit of welding, and cut a few things in here and there.
Fantastic. Great. It's a testament to the engines in those as well. I know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're great.
Aren't I just like the 200 TDI in my mind, best Land Rover engine.
A lot of people say that. Yeah.
And the fact that it can stand up for five years after working for so hard for so long and then still turn on start up.
Every now and again, a manufacturer gets it right. BMW with the M57 engine, you know, certain manufacturers get it right. And that, the 200 one is that's the
legend,
one, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the only thing that got in the way were emissions.
That's the
thing. You know, you get wonderful pieces of machinery that are made obsolete by by progress in, you know, call it progress.
Well,
you know, by legislation anyway.
I wonder if, you know, this what we're recording here now, I wonder if this was to be listened to in 30 years.
They'll go listen to those old.
Yeah, but will they have no idea what we're talking about?
Do you reckon 200 TDIs will still be around in 30
years? Yes, I do.
They will be.
I do.
Museums?
No. I think they'll be on the road because I bought my first Land Rover when I was 18. It was a 1950, lights through the grill, 80-inch.
Yeah.
And it was...
Nice.
It was hanging. It was
no, but I like an 80.
I owned it for 12 years, then I sold it. It was up for sale 2 years ago, but it was like £10,000 over the odds for one in that condition because I used to own it.
And also because it's
provenance.
I was like, well, I would like it, but I wouldn't like it that much.
The 80s are worth good money.
I know. Well, I've now got a Minerva 80. I'm quite happy with the Minerva 80. I think those are another little
They're
sleeper.
A niche, aren't they? They're
really
they're cool.
Sort of like coming up. If you want an 80-inch Land Rover and you're hanging around for ages just get a Minerva. Yeah. They're great. It feels exactly the same once you're sitting in there. So, yeah, I think they're great. But anyway, back to this disco. Yeah, I should never have sold my disco. I've had Land Rover products all the way through. The first 80-inch I shouldn't have sold, and the Discovery one I shouldn't have sold.
It's been a really interesting journey for us. Bringing Mike in as well. I was loving looking into his eyes when he walked through the door. He was emotional because he was standing there looking at a car that looked like it's come off the production line, knowing that he designed it. And what an achievement! What a legacy, you know.
And what a great guy.
Yeah,
he's very humble about it, but also massively knowledgeable. Sure. He's knowledgeable because he was there. You know, when you walk around the vehicle with him, it's sort of intuitive to him.
You can see it all flossing back.
He started like the blank piece of paper.
Yeah.
You know, and some crayons and some this, that and the other. And to know that, I mean, from looking into the science of it and the history of it, it appears that without Mike and his team, Land Rover might not still exist in the way that you know it today. And therefore, Jaguar as well. And to some extent, Ford lived off from whenever it was, 90 to whatever to 2008, they lived off it as well. So, you know, he was chatting about the success of that particular car had waves right through the industry.
The Discovery was pivotal because it opened up the market so much wider to families who didn't want the Prestige, couldn't afford a Range Rover, but didn't want to tool around in a 19J powered rattlebox either. So
exactly.
It was absolutely spot on and so timely because all the Japanese competition was kind of already getting, making waves, but the Discovery came in and blitzed everything on quality.
2 years they got given to do it.
Style.
2 years.
2 years.
They were given 2 years to do it. Which in the car world is just phenomenal turnaround. He said it was panic stations, but they enjoyed it. So for me personally, over that, you know, as a car guy, I've always been a car guy. Like we've had some, you know, the Paul McCartneys, the Beckhams, the Jack Blacks, the Prince Harrys on the show. But for me, meeting somebody who designed the car that we're working on, it doesn't get much cooler than that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Can we take a moment to talk about the sketch he did as well?
What
a prize. What a treat.
That's right. Just, you know, sort of he's drawn that vehicle. So he's done a sketch of that vehicle, but it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you say sketch,
the word is rendering.
Yeah,
a rendering.
I did the same course he did at Coventry University. I was on. So there was automotive transport design that was amalgamated with consumer product design, and I was doing that at the same time with the automotive guys. So the first year of that course was the same.
Right.
And I did the first year that he did. So
that first year, is that Stickman?
Yeah, very basic stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, crayons and that.
It was really great.
No, it wasn't sticks. No, it was actually things called magic markers. So you use, you know, Caran d'Ache sort of crayons and magic. These magic markers were the things that whenever you walked into the studio, you would, within a few minutes, you'd wonder why these people were so creative. And then within a few minutes of being in there, you went, I get it. The fumes off these things will sort it out. And Mike, he admitted that a lot of the cars that were designed over that time were with the benefit of the fumes coming off these particular pens. Yeah. So that's why they were so creative.
Don't try it at home, kids.
They did a great job.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the big things he told to me, I had a nice chat to him, was if you're not having fun, you're not going to be creative. And if you're not creative, you're not going to get the job done.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
I really, you know, how true is that?
Like, design houses are an interesting place. I've just come back from Mazda HQ for design in Hamburg in Germany. And their approach to it is very different. They have an empty building with literally nothing in it because they don't want any stimulation. They don't, because everything we are surrounded, whatever you're looking at now, listening to this, has been designed and has had a team of people working around it, creating it and building it. And that is having an influence on if you were to design something similar tomorrow. You, without knowing it, subconsciously would take cues from what you were looking at yesterday without even knowing it.
Wow.
So they have this theory of let's have nothing in there. So it's just white walls and nothing. So when you bring a product into their design studio and it's just white walls that just disappear into the distance, the focal attention that you give, the focus you give this item is phenomenal. So kind of different to the way that Jaguar did it. And they both clearly work because they're both winning cars.
But another way that he talks about, and I think you were there when he was saying it, they often used to get just a bit of tracing paper and then a photograph of a vehicle, maybe a similar size of vehicle or something like that, and they just do the wheels and, you know, sort of some rough position.
Yeah.
Take away that, and then
dot
put their
to
own
dot.
Thing on top.
Fill in
that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, do their own thing on top. And so, and you know, I've been a musician and songwriter and all that kind of tunesmith for years and years. And sometimes, if you haven't got the absolute core of an idea, sometimes you need to make a sketch. And sometimes that sketch can be, well, if I take that beat and, you know, so a bit of this, bit of that, put it all together, suddenly you get something totally new.
Yeah.
And it's amazing as well to see that, I know Land Rover are quite good at winking back to their sort of previous designs, but the styling cues on Discovery have come through the ranks to the present day, and love it or hate it, the Discovery 5 does have the offset number,
well,
the Alpine lights.
Interesting, so Mike there is responsible personally. He was solely responsible for the first Range Rover Sport.
Wow.
Yeah, which in itself is like, what? He said there were three of us. There was the boss, then was interior, and then exterior. Two people, ultimately. Yeah. And he did the entire works.
Because that, there was nothing quite like that when that came out.
No, exactly.
It's like a proper performance, you know, from the ground up.
Oh, people loved them, didn't they?
And there we are. You know, that's, so there's that guy.
The one bloke.
Unassuming guy walking around bits of the Cotswolds.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you happen to be in a certain town, in the Cotswolds, when you see a fella looking wistfully in a car park at an older Land Rover product, it might just be him.
And here's the truth. You probably wouldn't be listening to this podcast if it wasn't for Mike Sampson, because the cars that he invented, you might not even have ever got to meet, and you might not have ever fallen in love with Land Rovers or whatever it is you love, and therefore you might never have listened to this podcast. So actually,
you can
to close this, you've got to thank Mike Sampson for the fact you're even... The fact we exist to some extent.
That's right.
I mean,
you know, it's got really deep, really quickly.
Jaguars, Fords, Land Rovers, loads of different cars. It's just a really interesting period of time, isn't it?
You know, as John Lydon or Johnny Rotten said back in 1977, no future without Samson.
Yeah.
Well, thank you ever so much for your time, Tim and Fuzz. Brilliant to
chat to you.
And,
you too.
It's really great to see the enthusiasm for these discoveries, and long may continue.
I'd like you want one. We both want one. You want for that one.
And the great thing is that a really well-heeled listener to this podcast might go, "Do you know what?
I'll buy him one."
Yeah,
but the one you get, the one you get will not come with a high quality rendered drawing of the exact car that we're giving to James in a few days by the designer of the car. I've seen pictures of that very Discovery 3 years before anybody knew of its existence. Yeah.
Well, do you know, I've got Mike's number, so
there you go.
I'll ask him for one.
Yeah,
I'm getting in another pub.
There we go.
No worries. Anyway,
right, good luck. We've got to get out of here. People have got work to do.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. See you later.
We'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah. Are we both all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
That was amazing, wasn't it?